Well, the launch of Space Shuttle Endeavour has been scrubbed. Science advisor and head of the EnterpriseMission.com, Richard C. Hoagland, monitoring the NASA situation. Richard, same problem as they had a few days ago?
Same problem. This pesky liquid hydrogen vent valve was showing something like 66,000 parts per million, and the limit is 44,000. And they tried everything. They tried recycling the valve. They tried stopping the fill. They tried increasing the fill, meaning the level of liquid hydrogen in the tank. Nothing's working, and they don't have time to fix this, really, for a launch now in this June window. So this means the next possible launch of Endeavour will be July 11th.
Now, what about the Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter, which was supposed to go?
I wondered when you'd ask. Well, the problem is, and this is something that we probably need to discuss at some level on the show, there is, let me turn down NASA here.
Okay.
There's a range problem as well. It's going to take them 24 hours now to recycle, well, not quite 24, maybe, 12, to recycle the range so they can support LRO. So LRO cannot go until at the earliest tomorrow afternoon, probably around 5:30 in the afternoon, but probably most likely on the 19th. So the shuttle is now kaput until next month.
Jeez.
LRO, which is an amazing mission. We need to discuss all the bells and whistles and tweets on that.
I'm on that mission, you know.
I understand that a part of you is on
that. Yes, that's right. The good part of me.
The PT part.
Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, we ought to set some time aside, hopefully, when it launches this week, to talk about what it's going to do and why it's critical to this audience in looking at the lunar ruins situation. There's some really interesting things coming up, but it's really disappointing for all the guys who worked overtime to try to get this thing ready to launch the shuttle to the space station, and those guys will now have to stand down until next month.
Well, and let's hope they fix that problem, Richard.
Well, that's another situation. This is really a aspect, a side effect of the creeping age of the system, the lack of money, the fact that they're trying to transfer some hardware now to the new Constellation program, even though the president has kind of put that on hold with this review, which won't be in until August. And so a certain piece of simulation gear of this valve and vent complex that they would have tried out all their hardware fixes on before has been scrapped. It's toast. It's no longer there. So they literally have to do this on the flight hardware, and they have to fill that tank with 500,000 gallons of liquid hydrogen and liquid oxygen just to see if they have a serious cryogenic leak. It's really nuts. This is so primitive. I'm watching this the whole weekend, and I'm saying to myself, this is so primitive. This is where space flight has not gone in 50 years?
Jeez. Keep monitoring it. Thanks again, Richard, our science advisor and head of the EnterpriseMission.com. In a moment, Marilyn Hughes joins us. Out-of-body experiences, what you need to know. Researcher, author Marilyn Hughes had a long-standing career in broadcasting as a news anchor, reporter, producer, and has experienced, researched, written, taught about out-of-body travel and mysticism since 1987. She has appeared on numerous radio and television programs to discuss thousands of her out-of-body experiences. Marilyn has written more than 50 books, 30 magazines on out-of-body travel and comparative mysticism. Here she is back on Coast to Coast. Hey, Marilyn, how are you?
I'm great. How are you, George?
Good. Haven't had a chance to talk to you since you were with me last December. Did you have a good time on that trip?
I sure did.
Yeah, that's good.
That was great. Thank you so much.
And I was talking to the real Marilyn. You weren't out of body at that time, were you?
No, I was in.
That's good. Let's go back a little bit to some who are just joining us.
Okay.
And they didn't hear that interview. Tell me a little bit about your experience with OBEs.
Well, I had my first experience when I was a child, when I was about 9 years old. I had a very, very powerful experience wherein the heavens opened up, a staircase to the heavens. There were clouds and the angels, and there was a couple of thrones. One of them was what I perceived as God the Father and then God the Son. And I went through a lengthy experience wherein I was shown that I was going to do something different later on in my life, I was going through a difficult time at that period in my life, and I was shown that I would get through it. And what ended up happening was that was the only thing that happened as a child, but I never forgot it because it was so profound. And then when I was about 22, I believe, I started having the out-of-body experiences again. And then it started progressing. It began more with the learning the things you might have heard about, the vibrational experiences, getting out of your body, experiencing the astral realms. But it progressed into things that I never could have fathomed, going into myriads of realms, you know, above and below and in between, and learning about how good and evil works, reincarnation, lost souls and ghosts, all kinds of interesting things. Went into a lot of my own past lives. I found that in these experiences, I traveled through many different types of corridors. There's a different type of corridor for different types of travel. For instance, if you're traveling into a past life, the corridor that you go through looks very much like what people describe in the near-death experience, where you have the tunnel with the light.
At the end, yeah.
Yes. But then in other types of travel, like when you're going to other realms, you'll go through various types of almost like tubular, cylindrical tunnels, but they're all very different. Some of them have ribs on them that go around the tunnel. Some of them are more cloudy. They all have a different type of appearance and feel to them, and it all varies based on where you're going. And, of course, when I first started having the experiences, I never would have imagined, you know, the extent the experiences would take.
Well, you know, I had my only OBE when I was 11 years old, Marilyn, bouncing on the top of the ceiling, seeing my 11-year-old body at the time, and then it just rammed itself right back down. But I've never been able to duplicate it since. I've gotten close, I think, maybe in dream states where I might have been traveling and felt that it was a dream. And, you know, when you're that way and somewhat groggy, you're really not sure. But it hasn't happened a lot to me. There's almost like there's a barrier with me.
Well, I think that a lot of people have shared with me their frustrations with not being able to achieve it to a significant degree. Some people have tried for 20, 30 years and never had anything happen. And some people have had a few experiences like you're describing and are frustrated because it hasn't gone further. One of the things that I tried to go into in out-of-body experiences, what you need to know, was some of the things that I think in the modern world we've forgotten about that actually are kind of the keys to these experiences, which are the ancient paths of the masters that have been laid out for us. Because we have thousands and thousands of years of history where we've had masters who have achieved these high mystical states, and we don't realize that what they're doing is they're taking the out-of-body experience to a higher level. And so if we tiptoe backward and look at some of the words that they left behind, they're going to show us the way to achieving this on a higher level.
What is the true nature of OBEs, Marilyn? Is it? I was always told that, you know, when you're asleep, your astral body leaves the physical body connected by this silver cord, and it kind of hovers a little bit, and that's how your physical body and your astral body gets energy. It has to do this almost on a daily basis. Do you agree with that?
I do agree with that. I've never seen the silver cord, but I have seen many, many instances where people are in a state, what I call subconsciously astral, which means that they are out of their body, but they won't remember it when they come back. So either they'll remember they had a short snippet in a dream, or they won't remember it at all, but they were very definitely out of their body. I wrote about it in The Mysteries of the Redemption quite a bit, but the reality is we do receive. And it's not just the energy that we're receiving, but we're receiving guidance and direction. So there's different things that we go to in those dreaming states at night that may relate in particular to our individual circumstances where we're receiving direction and guidance for those individual things we're going through.
Now, tell me about your work out-of-body experiences, what you need to know, because this is new.
Yes, this is new. And one of the reasons I wrote it, besides the fact that I was, all the books that I write, whenever I write them, I have an out-of-body experience, and I'm shown what I need to write and what it needs to be called and all that stuff. And so, of course, I was shown it in an out-of-body experience. But the reason for it, the purpose for it, is to help people take the out-of-body experience beyond the just thinking about techniques. A lot of people think that it's going to happen through techniques alone when it's actually it's more of a spiritual practice. One of the ways that is that somebody stated back to me who had read the book that said it very well was that those who have sought God with their whole heart and with a pure heart usually have these experiences in, you know, by themselves.
Right.
It's automatic. And so there is this this path that we're forgetting, which is part of the whole journey, which is it starts with mental discipline, starts with understanding some of the things that we may believe or that we may think or our emotions that might be disturbing our ability to see things from a higher level. In Buddhism, there's a lot of information about detachment and hindrances. And hindrances can be any kind of delusion that we might have that we don't even know we have. And delusions or emotions that are not understood can be as common as the waves on the sea, where when you one of them arises and then it falls as you realize what it is, but then another one arises.
What creates these hindrances, Marilyn?
Our basic nature creates, I think, our basic
attitude, everything like that?
Well, yes, and just our humanness, because it's part of the reason we're human is to become able to rise above certain issues that we deal with in this world. You know, I mentioned in our previous conversation how we are in a mortal realm. And in this mortal realm here, which is third and fourth dimensional, which would be here and the overlapping astral reality, this is the realm where the battles between good and evil take place. So the reason that these things arise in us is because we have an interior battle going on between our own good and evil. And another way you can look at it for those who aren't comfortable with the terms good and evil is destructive and creative sides. So either something that we are doing or even just the way we're experiencing something, we can respond to it destructively or creatively.
Now, and you're saying in your work that you're presenting, not giving techniques. What's the difference?
The difference is that techniques are just a small part of achieving these experiences in a significant degree. They do work for some people, but for people who really start to seek out, like, really the high mystical states and want to, you know the truth, so to speak, the difference is that it's a way of life. It's a way of thinking where you start altering the way that you respond to the stimuli around you, the circumstances around you. You have to start examining what's happening. And what happens as a result of doing this is that the experiences themselves escalate, and you begin to receive, you'll have out-of-body experiences where you're actually shown your hindrances.
Were we made to have OBEs? Is this normal and natural, or are we doing something that we shouldn't be doing?
My own personal perception is that it is normal and natural. I don't think that it happens for every person and that it's not necessarily meant to happen for every person. I think some of us are more like prone to have the experience than others. It's almost like, for instance, people who are able to accomplish great physical feats, I would not be able to do that because of the nature of my own particular health. but it would not it wouldn't diminish the fact of those who do that, that that's a particular gift that they have. There are some people who seem to have an easier time with it. It's just something that's innate within them. I do think that it's a natural experience for humans to have. Based on the thousands of experiences that I've had, I think it's actually an integral part of our evolutionary process and progress in this world, because I've seen so much relating back to what you said previously about what people are doing when they're not even aware of it, when they're unconscious of it,
right,
when they're dreaming and may not even remember that they're dreaming, or they're out of body and they either think of it as a dream or they don't even remember it in any way at all. But these things are going on, and this is how I see this circle between the mystical world and our world, where we are being directed by the eternal to move towards that creative principle rather than the destructive principle. We're being shown how to utilize these things that we bring up within ourselves, which are, you know, some of them are very just simple karmic nature things that come up with each individual person that we, you know, that we all have different karmic configurations, but they come up and it's like heaven's way of helping us to move forward so that we don't stay in one place.
Years ago, Marilyn, Heywood Carrington, Sylvan Muldoon researched astral projection. As a matter of fact, they wrote a book called The Journeys Out of the Body. That was by Monroe. Theirs was Projections of the Astral Body. These people were pioneers during their day. And
yes,
what they talked about was these different tiers in the astral plane, some of which they said you don't want to visit. You don't want to have to go through. If you go through them, it could be pretty frightening. Did you ever experience that?
Yes, definitely. And I'm very cautious when people are having, some people have very negative experiences. I've had both positive and negative experiences. In my own personal case, I've been taken to heavenly realms, what I would consider purgatorial realms, and what I would consider lower realms, which could be, you know, comparable to hell realms or something like that. Or you could even just perceive that as a lower level of evolution than we are at here, where people are actually discharging a great more, much higher level of evil or darkness. And that would be like first and second dimensional. So yes, and in the astral realm, which is the realm which overlaps the third dimension.
Can you get snatched, though, going through those planes, the bad ones? Can they keep you there?
That's
not good.
That's a good question, because the thing that can happen is that things can attach to you. If you are not doing this, and this is part of the reason why, in the new book that I put out about out-of-body experiences, I highly suggest that people go back to the masters, is because the masters did not follow this path alone. They were directed by God in the mystical states, and therefore they traveled with protection. And so when I've done these things, I've been in some precarious situations, but all I do is I call out for help and it comes. But I've also been shown that some people, if they're trying to push this experience too quickly when they're not ready, yes, you can get things that will actually attach more to you. You're more likely to have something attached to you than in terms of like getting stuck in one of these realms.
Mm-hmm.
It's more likely that you'll bring something negative back with you. You might wake up the next day and just feel kind of not right, you know?
Can you come back possessed?
That can happen. I think that's more rare. But, you know, there are different levels. When you're talking about possession, there's things like obsession that come before possession, where you may not be completely possessed, but you are being influenced rather than there's a dark spirit that's taken over your soul. You can definitely have not only dark or evil spirits that are affecting you, influencing the way you're thinking. You can also have wandering spirits or lost souls do the same thing.
Let's talk more about this when we come back, Marilyn. Fascinating. I'm George Norrie. Marilyn Hughes, our special guest. Out-of-body experiences, what you need to know. Hey, if you haven't signed up yet for the free Coast Zone newsletter, you can get it by going to coasttocoastam.com and registering. It is delivered to your computer doorstep the next morning and every morning, and you'll enjoy that. And those of you who participated in the free Streamlink week, I hope you enjoyed that as well. Streamlink for just pennies a day. You can get podcasting downloads and have all kinds of fun with Streamlink. So you can do that as well and sign up for Streamlink by going to coasttocoastam.com. We're with Marilyn Hughes. Marilyn, a lot of people have participated in out-of-body experiences. It is an old practice, yet a lot of people think it's kind of new. How come?
I think that people have forgotten that out-of-body experiences really can be compared to the high mystical states that were achieved by the masters that go back thousands of years. We think it's more of a new age concept, something that's been talked about, studied in the last 100 or so years. But in reality, we have thousands of ancient sacred texts that document people doing this for thousands of years. I mean, one person in particular that comes to mind is Earth Store Bodhisattva, who is a Buddhist monk who was alive probably about 1,500 years ago. And he had a special mission of going into the hell realms and actually liberating souls from the hell realms. And a sutra exists today of his experiences in those lower hell realms. You know, about 150 years ago, we had a Reverend Vale Owen, who had these experiences where he was given explicit details, and he put it in a six-volume series about his own mother's afterlife journey. And it goes into, like, the daily events of the things that she was learning from day to day. But in every religious tradition, any of them, they all have out-of-body experiences that go back thousands and thousands of years, and we forget that this is definitely not new. And the benefit of understanding that is realizing that there is literature out there that can really help us to a much higher degree to achieve the high mystical states that a lot of people are looking for.
Are out-of-body experiences somewhat similar to remote viewing?
There is a similarity, but they are kind of different. What I've seen in terms of what remote viewers do is they're able to focus on an object, and they're it's almost more like a psychic gift, but it is mm-hmm. different than, you know, it's a little bit more than that.
So a lot of similarities, but a lot of differences.
There's some differences, yes, definitely.
Do you ever use your OBEs just to gather information and to help your own life?
Oh, I receive a lot of guidance from my out-of-body experiences. A lot of the guidance. The reality is that when you really go into the heavy-duty spiritual path, you're going to have things shown to you and pointed out to you a lot of times, whether you like it or not. But it's very, very, very powerful to be taken into a state where you get to see yourself through the eyes of God, through the eyes of the eternal, through the eyes of some purer state, because it's very humbling. It points a lot of things out to you that you would not otherwise probably see. And so it's very powerful in that regard. It's very transformative. It's not merely, you know, a lot of people think about out-of-body experiences and, you know, doing a an experiment where you'll see if you can fly to another part of the country and see what somebody's doing. But when you're talking about really achieving out-of-body experiences full potential, it's a transformative experience that leads you to the truth and helps you to dispel your own delusions, your own misunderstandings about yourself and others. It is very transformative in that way.
Do you think that people try remote viewing, out-of-body experiences, to compensate for their lack of remote viewing abilities, or do you think vice versa at all?
I think that most people, I've heard from a lot of people who are interested in out-of-body experiences, I think that they're trying to find the truth. I think they want a lot. What I hear over and over again is they want to experience the truth themselves. They want to know what it really feels like to know. So I really think that most people who are trying to achieve out-of-body experiences are seeking that self-knowledge, but also the knowledge of God, the knowledge of what our purpose here is, what their individual purpose is. That's what I hear a lot.
Are OBEs done in real time, Marilyn? By that I mean, if you leave your body, you're not going into the past, you're not going into the future, you're in real time.
Sometimes they're in real time, but much of the time you're in what I call the state of timelessness, where you can be going forward and backward in time.
Ah.
You can also be gone for a certain period of time, like let's say you're gone for 2 or 3 hours, but you might have been somewhere for 2 weeks. So there's a very big difference in the time variation. And there are some realms. Now, like if you're going into past lives, you're going to go forward or backward in time. That might surprise people, but sometimes you're going forward in time when you're going to a past life because they're not always in sequence and then in the time continuum. But there are also realms that actually just reside in a state of timelessness. And that is completely different because you're always outside of time in those. And those are some of the higher realms where a lot of initiations and rites of passage take place. And some of the really awesome types of heavenly and celestial experiences would take place.
Who created this? I mean, why was this all done?
The out-of-body experience?
Yes.
I believe that God created it to build a bridge between this side and the other, to give us a chance to progress while we're here. One of the things that we forget as human beings is that we are here for a very short time. We usually live our lives as if we're here permanently, but we all know we're only here for a temporary little moment in time. And so I believe God created it. And the eternal is a good way to put it as well, because it's more of an all-pervading force as well to help us to progress so that we wouldn't just keep coming back and coming back and coming back and not necessarily tap into, well, what exactly do I need to accomplish while I'm here in order to move on to the next level?
But if they can do that, if they can create their ability to do this at will, what does it do to them in their real life? Are they more sensitive to their surroundings? How does it benefit somebody?
Oh, it benefits. It's benefited my life profoundly. It's also, you know, I think that the gift also benefits others when it comes to, you know, instances where I have a lot of out-of-body experiences relating to deceased relatives of other people, things like that. It benefits people who are mourning and in grief. In my own life, it's benefited me profoundly in the sense of I've taken a completely different direction in my life than I would have had I not had these experiences. There are so many things that I did not understand about myself that I would not have changed, and that's not to indicate that I still don't have plenty that I'm working on now, because I do. But the kinds of things that I have learned about where I was mistaken, where I was self-deluded, how God saw my vanity through his eyes, all these things. I remember one experience I had with the Buddha where I was taken into the energies of wonderment, devotion, and detachment. And it was a purely white realm. It was pure love and pure detachment. And in that space, I was able to see my own intentions from the eyes of the eternal. And it was very disappointing at the time. It happened about 10, 12 years ago, maybe somewhere around there. I had this experience, and I realized that everything I had ever done, including the things that were good, were done for selfish reasons. And I got to see it and feel it, and it completely changed the course of my life. And, of course, everything that I've had, everything that I've done with it, the books I write, the website that we've put up, which is outofbodytravel.org, everything that I do has been shown to me first, whether it's writing something, whether it's music, whether it's painting, everything that I have done, even electronically, technologically, I've been shown how to do things in these out-of-body experiences that I would never have done had I not been pushed to do so.
So you're glad you've been able to do this?
I am glad. I mean, there are times, I have to admit, when sometimes it would be, you want to kind of just go back into normalcy for, you know, a few days or something. But in the bigger picture, just because of what normalcy is down here, but you have to remember when you've experienced these higher realms to such a profound degree, you have no doubt about their existence. And so the only issue becomes that it's more difficult to do that in a realm like this, where things like this are harder for other people to accept. You know, once we cross over, the minute I cross over, it's not going to be a problem at all, because I already know what to expect.
I was going to say, you're convinced there is an afterlife.
Oh, I have no doubt.
No doubt.
No doubt. No doubt whatsoever.
You can come back and tell us?
I will. I will definitely try.
You'll be one of our first guests who crossed over.
I'll come over somehow. We'll see.
Just don't make it a collect call, please. You remember
definitely
the movie, the old movie, A Christmas Carol, the one about Scrooge?
Yes.
The real old ones, okay? The black and white ones.
Yes.
And do you remember how whenever he traveled, the spirit would make him appear at these places? I think, though it looked like it was a physical thing when Dickens wrote this, I think it was astral projection.
I do, too. I do, too.
He went to the present. He went into the past. He went into the future. But like you said, there was no timeline here. I mean, it didn't affect him.
Right. And they were just casual observers, and people were not aware of them. So it indicated they were non-physical. There was actually a movie done about the life of Charles Dickens. I wish I remembered the name of it, but it was done by PBS, where they showed the process of how he wrote A Christmas Carol, and he had some very profound experiences which led him to write that book. And I believe very fully that he had profound out-of-body experiences.
When you do this on your own, how long does it take you?
Having an out-of-body?
Mm-hmm.
When I first started, it took a lot longer than it does now. It comes pretty easy to me right now. I still have to do a lot of meditation, contemplation. I have to make time for quiet and solitude, which is hard because I have three kids. But when I was first having the experiences, it was very lengthy. I had some spontaneous experiences like you mentioned having when you were younger, where I popped out of my body and I was flying above it and seeing, and so I was having these experiences in the room and then starting to move around the room. And in that period of time, I could stay in meditation for 6-7 hours at a time before the vibrational state would come upon me. Now it can happen almost as soon as I drop off to sleep.
That's pretty fast.
Yeah, but it took a long time, 22 years. Well, it's probably been this way for maybe the last 5 to 10. But the first 10, 15 years, I would guess, and venture, took a lot more effort. And especially in the first 5 to 6 years when it started happening, I really had to do a lot of concentration, meditation, and I had to be very, very diligent and disciplined, not giving up, you know, too soon, because of that vibrational state would come on when you least expected it.
Do you think you can die in your astral state?
Oh, I think you can, but I don't think the astral state would cause your death. I think actually that would be nice to die while you're already out of your body. It might be more pleasant that way. And in fact, I think a lot of people might already do that, from what I've heard from people and experienced with working with some people who are dying. A lot of people do seem to be, not everybody, but some people do seem to be already out when their body actually expires, which I think is a nice thing.
I wonder, Marilyn, people who die in their sleep, for example. You know,
I think that's
like
a great
Danny
way
Gans.
To go.
Do you really?
I really do. I think that's probably the nicest and easiest transition that I can think of.
Do you think they're aware that they know what has happened to them?
I think that probably what happens is some of them probably are not. And the reason I think that is because I've had some interesting experiences where I was shown people crossing over. And so, like, for instance, say someone has an arrhythmia, a heart arrhythmia, I think they could be out of their body before they had any idea. Now, if someone has something occurring to them that's more of a painful condition, I think they might become aware of it and experience it a little bit while they're in their body and be kind of half awake, half asleep, and then it might happen. So I think it could vary depending on what they pass away from.
If you had an opportunity to meet some of the older remote viewers, the Robert Monroes, Robert Crickall, Muldoons, the Carringtons, what would you ask them?
Oh, that's a good question. I would very much like to talk to Robert Monroe about the HemiSync technology. I think the HemiSync technology is very interesting. Ironically, when I first began having my travels, I read Robert Monroe's books, and I've always had a great deal of respect for Robert Monroe and the Monroe Institute. And I think that what would be interesting would be to compare notes on the experiences that they've had, because their particular purpose seems to be different than mine. And so I'm always intrigued with, like, those who seem to have more of a scientific purpose, and mine seems to be more bringing in some of these other concepts of the good and evil and the purification of the soul, and going into the actual understanding the prophets and saints and mystics and sages. I think it's really would be very interesting to compare notes and take in the scientific aspects of what they've experienced and discovered, and compare it with the spiritual aspect of what I discovered. It would really make it a complete picture.
You know, I have found that people that at least attempt to try to do OBEs, astral projection, even though they may not be successful, Marilyn, they tune themselves up. They become more intuitive, more psychic.
That's true.
Because they've learned this meditation process, and that works.
Right. And, you know, one of the things that I tell people as well is that out-of-body experiences is a path. It's not the truth in itself. And so it's important to realize that we find the truth in different ways. And if you don't have an out-of-body experience, it's okay, because God will lead you to the truth in whatever way He has called you to do so. And the out-of-body experiences themselves, one of the things that we can gain a great benefit from is being open to hearing those of the other people who have had them over the years.
We're going to find out when we chat with people on the phone, too, what kind of experiences they've had. And I bet, Bo, that they're not all pleasant. I don't think they are.
No, they aren't. A lot of people have. I've had many people who have had both, and many people have had either only good or only bad. And so, yes. There definitely is a dark side, and it's an element that we have to deal with.
Now, does that affect them in their day-to-day living if they've had bad OBEs?
Well, I think that it probably does, and a lot depends on what they've experienced. I've seen situations of people who have had disturbing near-death experiences where they've gone to lower realms and things like that, and it completely changed their lives. I've also seen people who have had some very interesting situations where they're dragged down when they go out of their body, and it does affect them in a negative way. And most people, when they're having that, I tell them to pull back, ask God in prayer to take the experiences away in the meantime, and allow them to begin a process of purification, so that they can, if they are meant to have the experiences down the road, that they can enter into it again in a different space.
All right, we'll be back with you for more, Marilyn, in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Marilyn, you mentioned that the masters are around too. Do they help? Are they like angels? Do they help you through this process?
They do. I wouldn't call them angels. They're different in terms of what kind of a being they are. But the masters from throughout the ages are very much, I call them the royal family of God, because they all work together in helping humanity to continue to evolve. It doesn't matter if they're Buddhist, Christian, Islamic, Hindu, or Native American, or Jewish, or any other religion. They're all working together.
Well, and they've all performed, I think, OBEs. Every religion has.
Yes, yes. The mystics in all the religions have done that. And frankly, most of our world religions came about because of profound out-of-body experiences.
If somebody practices and can't do it, what does that mean about them?
It usually doesn't mean anything except that it might not be what they're being called to do. A lot of people have, this kind of experience, as I mentioned earlier, took a great deal of time for me to cultivate. And I was given a situation when I was at home with my kids when they were younger to do that. A lot of people have other callings in this life, and it may not happen for them in the same way because of that. An interesting example, too, of showing how out-of-body experiences can be instrumental in getting us started, but then they can stop, is like Mother Teresa. You know, Mother Teresa had this great vision of what she was supposed to do, and then she experienced the dark night for the remainder of her life, 40 years, where she did not feel the presence of God. But she received enough of that revelation, that out-of-body experiences that she needed, to know what she needed to do. And then she had so much on her plate, I don't know if there was room for her to continue doing it. And that might be why it was withdrawn. And so I don't think it means anything, except that maybe this person is not called to seek the truth in their particular life in that particular way.
What do you see as really the true benefit of astral projection, OBEs?
I think the benefit is the evolution of the soul. It's actually the ability to figure out why you're still here, you know, because if we're reincarnating here, we're still here because of something we have not figured out yet. And so, you know, when I went through my experiences, I went into hundreds of past lives and saw this pattern going on and over again, and was able to identify what I needed to overcome in order to hopefully finish up this time around. So there's a great deal to be accomplished spiritually, in terms of why we're actually still here on the earth.
Did you see that cord that connected your body with the astral body?
I've never seen it.
You've never seen the
cord?
But
I've read about a lot of people who have. So
Why can't you see it?
I've just never seen it.
Interesting, because some used to say if it breaks, you die, but it doesn't break unless you die.
And that's what I've heard, too, but I have never seen a cord. But I know that many people have, so I don't really know what to make of that.
Where have you gone? Have you gone to far-out distant planets and places?
Oh, yeah. I've gone to many distant planets and galaxies. I've traveled into profoundly beautiful dimensions that are, you know, would be, you know, realm five and above, and it goes on into infinity, so you can imagine, are the different levels of light. And they continue to expand as you go out. And I've been to a myriad of those realms many, many times. I've been to the sun. I've been to the Pleiades, Alpha Centauri.
Have you seen other civilizations and how they live?
I have.
Give me an example of a city, for example, on a different planetary system.
Well, like one of the experiences I had would...
Now I feel like I'm talking to Jodie Foster in Contact. By
Yeah, I've had several, but I'll try to give you an overview. One of them was the crystal cities of what I saw as the Pleiadian area of the galaxies or whatever. There were like amethyst buildings that were crystalline.
Amazing
crystalline-like structures that were huge, like quartz crystals that would shoot up out of the ground. Mountains that were of pure crystal, and seeing the seven Pleiadian stars instead of the one sun that we see. It was very, very beautiful. And this is a realm that is a very higher than us in like an unconditionally loving, very free and spiritual realm. One place I was taken to that I'll never forget, I was only allowed to experience it in a very remote way. these beings came to me from, I guess I would call it a star system because I have no idea where it is. All I was given to know was that it was a star system that was so much further advanced than us that I could only stand being in it for a few minutes. And what they did was they came, they were all in white. They appeared to me, for my benefit, as somewhat human, but they were very, very bright, brilliantly lighted. And what they did was they held my hands, and when they held my hands, I got to experience being in the world they came from for a few moments, and I cannot even describe it. I begged them not to let me come back. It was beyond even, you know, like the Pleiadian experiences, which I've had a lot of. Seen some, like with the Alpha Centauri experience I had was interesting in that their sun seemed so huge in the sky compared to ours. It was like half the horizon. But this particular race of beings, whoever they were, represented such a high level of evolution that it's inexplicable. It was just the level of vibration you were taken to, the understanding that they had of the mysteries, and I got to touch into that for just, you know, a few moments.
Truly something. Let's go to some calls. Let's go to Ypsilanti, Michigan. Ron, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi, Ron.
Hi, George. How you doing?
Good, Ron.
Hi, Ron.
Hi, Marilyn. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing pretty good. I wanted to ask you about, I think I had an out-of-body experience.
Okay.
I was taking care of my brother. He had cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I was up and down all day with him and everything, and went to bed about 2 o'clock in the morning. And I just bolted right up at about 3 in the morning. And next thing I know, I'm looking out my window, watching myself walk around outside my house.
Yeah, it sounds like an out-of-body experience.
It was so weird, and I was confused. I was out in the yard, because I live on the country, and I was out in the yard, and I was really confused, and I was looking around, looking at the ground, looking at everything. Then the next thing I know, I'm back in I wake up about 4 or 5 hours later, but I don't remember anything about coming back from the yard, back in the, you know, in my body or anything.
Did you have any sensations of, like, sometimes when you go right out of your body and then you're in, like, in the backyard wandering around, if you're just in the overlapping astral realm, you'll experience what looks like twilight.
Yes, it was like that. It was a night, but it was like there was a full moon, you know.
Yes, yes. It sounds like you did have an out of body experience, and you popped out, and you were outside, and I know that one of the things that I experienced when I first started having those, I would see neighbors sometimes, and I would try to talk to them, and they couldn't hear me, and that would very much confuse me at first.
What about people who, you know, have these near-death experiences, and they pop out of their bodies, and they tell the doctor, I heard what you were saying, and this and that, and we've had guests on who've talked about that. Truly incredible cases, Marilyn.
Oh, I agree. I agree. I'm a full-fledged believer in near-death experiences.
Do you see color when you're in the astral state? Do you see blues, reds, anything like that?
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, the colors are more brilliant the higher you go, and dimension-wise. The lower you go, they become more darker, dimmer, things like that. But actually, the colors are one of the things that stand out when you start traveling to the higher realms, because they are so iridescent, and they're colors that you don't normally see in our world to the degree, the vibrancy. And a lot of times there's also what I would call like a sparkler effect. There's just this twinkling sparkler light that is all around you in the atmosphere. It's very, very different than what we see here.
In your travels, do you go into other parallel universes?
I have had that experience, but on a fairly limited basis. I've gone into parallel time frames. And I've gone into I guess if you're talking about parallel universes, definitely, yeah, because we're kind of, when you travel through, if you're going up into the heavens, a lot of times, black holes,
mm-hmm.
I call them star tunnels. If you go through the star tunnel, you're going to go into a parallel universe of one kind or another, and there's a lot of them. So they're not all the same. So one of the places that I go to when I go through those star tunnels is what I call the galactic heavens, where you see and you're shooting through space and you can see the stars and the planets and the nebulas, and it's in really vibrant colors. But there's also other like planetary systems that I've gone to where you have higher civilizations, and that's a completely different parallel universe. And then some of these overlap, some of them do not. And so it can get pretty complex and complicated.
All right, next up, let's go to San Diego. Antonio, you're up. Hi.
Hi. Hey, what's up, guys?
Hi, Antonio.
Hi, Marilyn. I just wanted to say that your energy and your tone is numbing, and I love it.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Antonio.
True.
I'm actually, I've been going to a place called Unarius and reading up on a guy, Dr. Norman, and actually trying to get into a lot of the stuff you're talking about. But I'm also very new to it. And also my, I kind of sometimes can have an out-of-body experience, but the way I explain it is it's almost like it's when I'm awake. Like I don't really remember my dreams at all, but I have a very, level of consciousness when I'm awake. It's almost, I almost call it like daydreaming, but it's almost, I don't know. Does that.
You know, that's interesting because that kind of goes back to what George was talking about earlier, I think, in that that is almost resemblance of remote viewing. Would you agree with that, George?
I would, absolutely.
It sounds like you're experiencing something similar to remote viewing.
Really?
Yeah,
because that's
it does.
That was a new concept. I listened to the whole show, and that was a new concept to me. That's weird.
Well, there's a lot of good books about remote viewing, and George mentioned some of them as well. But there's a lot of great books out there about the experience of remote viewing. I remember one in particular that really struck me was one called Psychic Warrior.
Yep, by David Morehouse.
Thank you, because I didn't remember the author. But there were several remote viewers who were in that government program that have put out books. I know Joseph McMoneagle is one.
Uh-huh. Ingo Swann, Hal Puthoff, all of them.
Yes.
Paul Smith.
And they have more of this gift where they have waking experiences, and they're able to travel across time and space and see things in the physical world, but also in the spiritual world. And that sounds more like remote viewing. So that's very interesting.
Let's go to William in New York, New York, east of the Rockies. Hey, William, how are you?
Great, thank you. Such a pleasure to talk to you.
Sure.
Hi, William.
Hi, Marilyn. And I do want to say what the other last listener said. Marilyn, your energy is really beautiful.
Well, thank you, William.
Palpable. Yeah. Well, you're very welcome. Thank you. I just had an interesting experience. It's quite late here, and I was falling asleep, and I fell asleep with the radio on, listening to you guys, and was totally aware that I was dreaming. I'm a very vivid dreamer, and that I was listening to the radio, and that I was aware that I was dreaming, and I thought, well, wouldn't it be extraordinary if I had an out-of-body experience now? And indeed, I had what I thought was one, and I guess a lot of people listening are probably wondering, well, I've had this and that, and is that does that count? Is that real or whatever? In this particular case, I felt the sensation of a kind of flapping wind, like a wind around me, as if the sheets on my bed were flapping, and I felt myself being sort of moved through space. And then I was so conscious of dreaming that I said, well, when I wake up, I'll call these guys. And the fact that I got you is sort of confirmation that this was special.
So this just happened.
Yeah, this is just now. Yeah. It's 3 in the morning here. And I was trying to think of an apt metaphor for what I was feeling so that I could report it to you when I was done. And I felt it was as if there was somebody pushing me through space. And I felt that almost as if how you would push a surfboard through the water. In other words,
almost like an eternal force.
Well, it was a person. It was a person pushing me. You know, a very tangible. I wasn't anybody I knew, but a tangible person had me and was being very careful about how my body was positioned and how it was a female and how she was pushing me. And you know, she would readjust my hand, readjust my head. And sort of push me through, and that was the astral journey. But I was also aware that things weren't accurate. In other words, and this is the big question I have, because I've had these things before. In other words, I wasn't in exactly the environment that I actually am in. It wasn't like I could see my messy apartment and
right.
Be in the bed or anything like that. In fact, at one point I looked in the bed and I didn't see myself, but I knew I was dreaming anyway. But I'm wondering... Well, for example, once I had an out-of-body experience where I was taken through the window and in New York City and sort of rushed across the river almost like I was blowing like in the wind, and I went to a house and I was compelled to heal somebody in that house, and I didn't know who they were or how to heal them, but somehow my presence was necessary to heal them. And it felt so profound and so real. But it wasn't the actual Hudson River I flew over, and it wasn't really New Jersey that I went to. And so I'm wondering, when we have discrepancies like that, I mean, I can imagine if – I'm sorry to talk so much.
No, that's okay. We've got some time before the break. Go ahead.
Thank you. When you know, when I hear about near-death experiences, part of the one of the things that people ask about is, well, you know, can you tell what was on the little table with the scalpels? What tools were there? Can you tell what the doctor was wearing that you wouldn't be able to see, for example? And I always think that's kind of a confirmation that those things really happened as astral experiences. But if you imagine the places that you see as being different, do you see what I'm saying?
Yes.
In the voyage, does that mean that it's, you know, I wonder whether that means that it's not valid as an astral experience or whether in a slightly altered world the way dreams are altered.
Exactly. We're in an altered world. I've had experiences where I've been actually allowed to see the shift from one dimension to the next in from one location, and I would look around the room and see how things changed with each shift. And so things do shift and change when we go from this dimension to the next, and we can experience things that are not quite what you would consider physically accurate, but there's something else happening at the same time. So I would definitely think you did have an out-of-body experience, but the thing that you're experiencing there is that anytime you switch from the third dimension to the fourth, to the fifth, to the sixth, any of those switches can switch the entire environment that you're in.
Marilyn, your website, outofbodytravel.org. Is that it?
That's it.
All right. Stay with us. More to come when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. Marilyn, if you were to explain out-of-body experiences in terms of a definition of what they are, what would you say?
I would say that an out-of-body experience is that your spirit is separating from your body, and you're going into what would be the overlapping reality, which many people refer to as the other side, which is, you know, we're experiencing the other side of existence, which is, you know, the other side of death. And there's a whole lot more on that side than I think a lot of us realize.
Indeed, they do. Next up, let's go to Bruce in Sacramento, west of the Rockies. Hi, Bruce. Go ahead.
George, Marilyn. Hi. Great
Hi.
Show.
Hi.
I'd like to talk about a specific OBE. I've had several of them since I was a child, but one in particular kind of stood out. I was driving in the car one evening, and for those in Sacramento, I was just passing Memorial Auditorium on 16th and J, and I was listening to the radio, and they were talking about a concert that was coming to Sacramento, and I got all excited, and I thought, oh, God, I got to call everybody and tell them about this. The second I did that, I'm out in Rancho Cordova in another town over at a friend's house, and I'm walking down the hallway of their home, and I'm walking into a living room, and I can hear a friend talking. She was in the kitchen. She was talking to another friend that I was not familiar with. Anyway, the other girl was talking, and right in the middle of a sentence, she stops and turns around and looks at me. And there was just a pause, and all of a sudden, Amber comes walking out of the kitchen and looked at her, and she said, the other girl said, "Who's that?" And Amber said, "Oh, that's Bruce. What do you want?" And all of a sudden, bam, I'm back in the car, and I'm at 29th and J, you know, what is it, 14 blocks away. And I thought, what just happened? I mean, I was weird. Yeah, it was weird. But that wasn't the weirdest part. The weirdest part was the following day when I was talking to him on the phone. Amber called up, and, you know, I was telling him about the concert and stuff. And there was a pause, and she said, "By the way, what did you want last night?" I go, "What do you mean?" She said, "Well, I was at home, and I had a friend over, and we were talking. And all of a sudden, the next thing I know, you're walking out of our hallway, and you're standing there."
Wow. Have you ever heard of bilocation, by chance?
I'm familiar with the term.
Well, a lot of mystics have reported through the centuries people who have been in two places at the same time, and they call it bilocation. Sounds very much like what your experience was, especially when you have the verification of the other party in that way, where it seems more like a bilocation experience rather than just a psychic moment. Do you know what I mean?
Would not be an OBE, would it?
It kind of borders on it because it's officially would be tagged bilocating because you're in two places at the same time. Because he would not have been able to also have kept control of that vehicle if he weren't in both locations at the same time.
Did you ever come across your own doppelganger?
I don't think I have.
You never know. Let's go to Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Hello, Eric. It's your turn on Coast to Coast.
Hi. Good evening.
Hi.
Very excellent show. Resonating well with the both of y'all. Always do with George. And just really have a few questions for you. I'll make it quick. I'm familiar. I've used the Monroe products. I've used the HemiSync products, and am currently in about 2.5 years into my awakening that I've known about my whole life. Kind of happy I figured it out at 34. I know it takes some people longer, and actually bumped into a kid the other day that actually has it all figured out at the age of 6. I thought that was kind of neat. But my question for you is this. When I am meditating, I'll know I'm getting close to having the out-of-body. I'll start getting muscle twitching, rapid eye movement, and it almost feels as if somebody unscrews the back of my head and starts playing with my brain a little bit.
Hmm. Yeah.
And during that time, it's almost as if, I want to say it's like having a TV on in the other room. Or a radio on in the other room, and it's like I'm hearing other commercials from other places and other people talking, but I can't quite make out what they're saying. And it's like it seems the harder I try to listen to what's actually being said, I lull off to sleep.
Well, let me give you some advice on what to do next time that happens. What you're probably experiencing there is the sounds of the astral plane. When you
right.
when you tune into the astral plane, you hear the thoughts of humanity. And so rather than focusing on those thoughts, try to go beyond the thoughts that you're hearing, because those are just random thoughts and they can actually hinder your development.
Okay.
And this feeling that you're having in the back of your head, a lot of times people will experience it more at the top of their head, which is where the crown chakra is, and you'll feel
right.
a lot of energetic activity up there. Focus more on that and allowing that to occur and kind of
okay.
pushing aside those voices that you're hearing, because those are probably actually causing a little bit of a distraction
to
help you get there.
one more thing for you real
sure.
quick.
Sure, go ahead.
I almost now, what I find happening is instead of the unscrewing of the head and feeling the vibration when I'm doing my meditations, I'm starting to frequent these things happening to me while I'm awake.
Uh-huh.
Almost to the point where I black out. But I can, and the only way I can describe it, it would be like multiplying myself, like ironing my feet into the ground and multiplying myself a million times. Like I'm, like, not replicating myself, but feeling myself stretching through these dimensions. And I guess, is there a way you can control that while you're awake?
I think you can. When you start opening up to the out-of-body experiences and stuff, you do start having more phenomena that's associated with, like, psychic phenomenon, becoming more aware of other vibrational realities when you're awake and conscious as well. And one of the things you can do is you pull your – it's kind of – you pull yourself in. You pull your energy back in if it gets to be too overwhelming or too much. Over time, that will come very naturally to you. You'll be able to do that almost without thinking. When you first start, like you're saying, you're 2.5 years into this, you can experience a lot of phenomenon that overlaps into your physical life. But as you discipline that, you're going to find that you can pull your energy back in when you need to. Does that make sense?
Well, maybe so. Maybe so. But it takes practice.
Yes, it does. It takes some time.
Let's go next to our first-time caller in Oklahoma City. Adrian, it's your turn. Hi, Adrian.
George, what a pleasure talking.
Good to have you with us.
Hi, Adrian.
Hi, Marilyn. You sound divine. I love it.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. And,
George, my birthday was yesterday, June 16, and I think Art's is also the same date.
I think his is the 17th, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, gosh, I beat him. anyway, Marilyn,
uh-huh.
How beautiful it is. You see, I'm so glad to be able to talk about this because it's very difficult to talk to people about experiences like this.
Yes, can be.
And by the way, it's so beautiful. I love it. It happened to me maybe about 3 or 4 times.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you said something that it just confirmed what I thought, what I think, that it is someplace that we go after, you know. And
yeah.
because I remember, you know, the 3 times that I had it, I was flying, Maryland, and it was so beautiful that, I mean, I want to come back.
I understand. The flying is indescribable.
My God, the way you just barely cleared. I don't know what I was, Maryland. I have no idea what I was, but I can only tell you that it was so wonderful.
And one of the neat things, too, because our bodies are light, our light bodies, our spiritual bodies, a lot of people don't realize we can travel at the speed of light when we are in our spiritual body.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes you are shooting through space at the speed of light, and it really is an unbelievable experience.
Unbelievable. Marilyn, you see, I was a truck driver for 32 years, and I ran Alaska, Canada, and United States. So I had no idea what I was, whatever happened to me, because, my God, Marilyn, is that a fact that, you see, I mean, am I right when I think of that, you see, that when we die, we go to those beautiful places that I already experienced, my God.
Uh-huh.
I'm asking you, you see, I mean, I'm asking you. And is that a proof that we actually go someplace after, you know, death?
Oh, is there proof that we go someplace after death?
And where do you go?
Well, that's a loaded question. but, you know, there are so many different possibilities based on what our various compatibilities are. When we cross over, we go to where we're compatible. So, you know, that can be any number of the higher realms, mortal realms. It can also be a lot of us end up going to what's commonly known as purgatorial realms, but they're really places of purification where we still have more work to do. Sometimes we return here to do some kind of purification. Reincarnation is part of the purgatorial process. There are lower realms that some of us also go to, depending on what we've been doing in this lifetime. But it has to do with our interior compatibility. It has to do with our intention, not just what we've been up to, what we've been doing, but it has to do with what we're actually intending in our heart. And that's where, you know, it says in the Bible, I believe, somewhere that that only God knows the heart of a man. There's a certain energetic knowledge that when I'm out of body, I can be shown, you know, the heart of a man. And we can't really know unless we see that.
Marilyn, why does it seem that death experiences are so similar to OBEs?
Because they're almost the same. The only difference between them really is the state of death, because we are going to the same places. Now, like when someone is actually near death, they're probably going to see the family members. They're probably going to go to the light. They're going to have the life review things. But we go through those things in out-of-body experiences as well. They might not all happen in the same experience, but we'll go through all those things as well. We're going to go to some of the same dimensions. There are some boundaries. Like, for instance, there are some areas where if you go beyond them, you generally are not allowed to come back.
Who makes those rules?
I call it the eternal law, is what I call it. Things that have been shown to me that are just eternal law, things that we cannot violate without violating the mechanics of existence, so to speak.
Interesting. Very interesting. Next up, let's go to Harlingen, Texas. Jerry on the wild card line. Jerry, take it away.
Hello?
Yeah, hi, Jerry.
Hi, Jerry.
Hi, my name is Jerry. Nice to meet you. It's nice to hear both of you. George, calm down.
Jerry, are you on a speakerphone or what?
Yeah, sorry about that.
Let's see if we can get you off that.
Oh, sorry. Hello?
Yep, there you are.
Okay. No, I'm sorry. It's because you have a friend named Vladimir, and he's from Russia, right?
Right.
He emigrated over here. And look, calm down now. It's going to be okay. I'm sorry. He's here with me today. He came with me because I told him I was going to talk to you all about this. He tells me he has astral projections. He's afraid of this. Stop. I'm sorry. He's trying to tickle me.
We're going to have to move on. Let him tickle you and have a good time. Maybe in the astral world they can tickle you, huh?
Oh, you can get tickled in the astral world, that's for sure.
Yes, you can. Feathers or not. Chicago, Illinois, we go east of the Rockies. Hello, Abe.
Hey, good evening, George. Good evening, Marilyn.
Hi.
I have a couple quick questions. Well, one, when you do the out-of-body experience and you're in your spiritual body, is it possible to enter the dream realm?
Yes, and a lot of times the dream realm and the out-of-body realm do overlap anyway, because a lot of times what people remember in dreams are actually portions of out-of-body experiences that they don't remember fully consciously. And so
yes,
you definitely can do that. There are different levels of consciousness that we experience, and a lot of people who are dreaming are just remembering portions of out-of-body experiences at a different level of consciousness, so it's more dreamlike. But when you have fully conscious out-of-body experiences, they become very much the same as a daily, you know, talking to someone in day-to-day life where the consciousness is just fully conscious.
How do you teach yourself, Marilyn, to wake up in your astral state?
I usually don't want to, so I haven't done it very often.
I mean, isn't that how you know if you're astral projecting, if you're out of the body?
Oh, well, no. You generally know it immediately because I'm aware of the process as I'm going through it. I'm aware of, you know, leaving the body, going to another realm. And most of the time, I don't want to come back. There have been times when, especially like when I've engaged in like demonic warfare, which I've had to do,
mm-hmm.
where I do want to come back, and then I will usually call out for help. And usually you're going to call out for Jesus to help you, and sometimes St. Michael will come in. I've had incidences where the Buddha and Zarathustra, Avalokiteshvara, various prophets, saints, mystics, sages have come in and helped me. And so I will always call for help if I'm in a situation where I really want to wake up and get out of it. I call for help.
What do you mean, though, you don't want to come back?
Oh, it's so awesome over there. You know, you're generally, you're like taking as long as you possibly
Isn't that dangerous?
I don't think so. It hasn't been for me, I guess I should say.
Have you ever had a problem where you couldn't get into your regular body?
Never.
All right.
Never.
Just my luck to be locked out or something. Let's go to Charles in Oregon. Get you in here, Charles, before the top of the hour. Go ahead.
Okay. Hey, thanks, George. I talked to you this weekend about my Pulling of the Hearts project.
Right. Okay.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you for being available and
being
open to that. Marilyn, I had an experience where I was driving to work, took 40 minutes to get there. I was talking to an angel, it seemed, who was in the car and yet way above me.
Mm-hmm.
And it, I got, you know, was being asked questions and answered them and vice versa. And, it was a 40 minute drive to work. But when I pulled into the parking lot and stopped and looked up, I saw that it felt like I was only in the car for 10 minutes. Would that be relative to an out of body experience?
I wouldn't call that an out of body experience, but it sounds like you had an experience that
missing time
and possibly where the time seemed to be shorter because you were so engrossed in that discussion.
I mean, sometimes you've driven right from one point to another and you don't know how you got there.
Yep.
you know, you're just like, you're aware when you get to the spot, but you don't know how you got there.
Right. Exactly. You kind of drift off into another space. And it goes quicker than you think.
We'll come back with our final hour with Marilyn Hughes and your phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. Marilyn, let's take a few moments before we go back to calls. Let's talk a little bit about the mysticism that's out there. In your work, did you find a difference between, for example, the Hindu mysticism, Buddhism, in areas like that?
The thing that I think you see primarily in terms of the difference between the different types of mysticism in these different religions often has to do with the approach that is sometimes more emotional versus more detached. In Buddhism and Hinduism, there's more of a focus on detachment and from worldly things and becoming more empty, whereas like in Christianity and Islam, you're going to see more of the ecstatic state where sometimes it's more achieved through the emotional. And so it's kind of a contrast, but they achieve a similar state with completely opposite approaches.
Why is it in modern Christianity, as I know growing up going to a Catholic church, I never, ever remembered a priest talking about out-of-body experiences or astral projection.
I think that in the Catholic Church, they would probably refer to it more as mysticism. But ironically, you don't hear about it in the Catholic Church that much, even though the Catholic Church is a real hotbed for mystics. The Catholic Church has a huge history of profound, profound mystics, St. Catherine of Siena. I mean, we've had some profound mystics in our own century, Teresa Newman, St. Padre Pio, who was also a stigmatist.
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason, I think the church has a tendency to focus more on what I would say dogmatic theology rather than mystical theology, which I think is a shame because mystical theology is very fascinating subject and it's very personally transformative, very deep study. If you switch over from the dogmatic theology of Catholicism to mystical theology, because it does go into all these processes, the purification of the soul and all these different things that we've been talking about.
Okay, let's go back to the phones. Portland, Oregon, we go. Jerry, west of the Rockies. Hi, Jerry. Take it away.
Morning.
Morning.
Hi, Gary.
Well, yeah, I'm calling about how I've got proof that astral projection is real.
Tell us.
Well, my ex-wife at the time, she visited me, and I seen her.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, there's only one way. I was working down at the shipyards. In this area of the ship I was working on, there was only one way for anybody to come into the tank without anybody, without me knowing it. And I know George would know what I'm talking about because it was in a water ballast tank of a Navy ship.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in there fire watching. And the tank itself was about as big as a house, but it was about 60 feet tall. And I was on a level of the tank that it's in pitch darkness, watertight tank, only one hole entrance into the tank. And I went home from lunch, and I was skeptical about it. And this was during my dating days, and she's the one that introduced me to astral projection, and I was kind of skeptical about it. And I'm like, well, because she's very good at it, and she can do it at will.
Well, I've heard of cases like that, and ironically, a lot of them seem to be around military situations, and perhaps the higher stress makes the opportunity arise for someone to be allowed to see somebody who's trying to communicate with you. But I've heard of that happening, where people do see someone who is astral projecting from somewhere else.
Well, the way she proved it to me was I went home for lunch, and you know, I told her where I was at, and I said, well, visit me. And I stopped by the store on my way going back to work, and I grabbed me a TV guide to read because I was fire-watching in the tank, and it was 10 hours of boredom. and all I had was a basket light and myself in pitch darkness. And I know George knows what I'm talking about because it's you know, you take light away from one of those tanks, and there's no light at all.
No. Darker than dark.
Pitch dark. All I had was a basket light and a flashlight.
Jeez.
And I got back to work, and I was laying there, laid down on the deck, used my hard hat for a pillow, lift my legs, and started reading the TV guide. And then I kind of swore somebody was standing right in front of me. And I'm like, what? I look, and there's nobody there. And,
well, you know, it's interesting because there are people who have more of a sensitivity to this sort of thing, and those who have had out-of-body experiences will tell you, you know, that they've tried to talk to people and people didn't see them there. But there are some people, just like with ghosts and other types of apparitions like that, have more of an affinity to be able to see it when someone is actually astral traveling to visit them. And that's probably the case with you, where you were more open to it and able to see her or feel her.
You know, with astral projection too, Marilyn, do you find that more and more people are beginning to be tuned into it now, or is it something that's going by the wayside?
I think, ironically, it's becoming more and more rampant. It's interesting to me to see you know, at the website, how many people from every corner of the world experience this. Devout Muslims, any country in the world, people who are living in a pagan country, people, any country. It seems to be actually growing in quite a high magnitude to me, and I think part of that is because people are seeking, and I think that for some reason, more people are becoming able to have the experience. And so they're having experiences that they can't explain, so they're looking for answers, irregardless of what their cultural or religious background is.
All right, let's go to Sioux City, Iowa. Hello, Courtney, you're up with us.
Hi, Courtney. Hi, Marilyn. Hi, George. Thanks for letting me on. Just wondering, my dad's always had this theory on deja vu, you know, when people experience that.
Uh-huh.
And he thinks it's connected somehow, like, you know, when you're asleep and what a little bit you were talking about, just that experience, and it's something your soul's kind of going ahead a little bit of time, and maybe that might explain everybody, I mean, even people that don't believe in such things, experiencing deja vu all the time.
Well, you
and
know,
what
actually,
is your take on that?
That's very interesting, because what I've seen in the mystical experiences I've had is that there's a realm that I call management, where everything happens in energy before it hits the ground. And so this is what a lot of psychics will tune into. But when it's in the management realm, it's still subject to change. But, yeah, we can dream about what's happening, what's forming up there in energy based on everything, the circumstances around us and our thoughts and everything that's going on. Uh-huh. And that exactly could be part of why some people will experience a deja vu, because it does happen in the management realm before it hits the ground. Sometimes it changes a little bit before it hits the ground, because sometimes people change their circumstances. And so that's where sometimes if a psychic is tuning into something that's about to happen, and if someone takes dramatic action, it'll shift.
You think people with negative energy, Marilyn, can also perform OBEs?
I do. I do. And I think God often uses it to help people who are in very difficult situations and circumstances, to help them either overcome or find ways to deal with whatever they're going through. I get a lot of email from people who are in profoundly difficult circumstances, who have been given a lot of help through out-of-body experiences and other spiritual experiences. And I think most people go through negative periods in their lives, especially when they're going through difficult times. And I think that's part of the way the Eternal reaches down and helps us to transform what might appear to be a really difficult negative experience into something that could be more useful to us.
Sure. Let's go to Bakersfield, California now. It's Michael's turn. Michael, go ahead.
Hi, Michael.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm a little nervous here because I've been listening to your guys' conversation, and, you know, I thought I was going crazy one time.
No.
About what happened to me one night. It was a lot of stress. A lot of buildup was going on in my life, and I was laying down, and it's just a lot of bad things were going on in my life, and I laid there watching the clock, and all of a sudden the time stopped. My body was getting numb. I couldn't feel anything. I couldn't reach over to my girlfriend to grab her. It was just a weird experience, and then all of a sudden I feel a tugging on my chest, like something wanting to come out. And as that was happening, everything from when I was a little kid to now was flashing before my eyes, like a strobe light effect.
Mm-hmm.
But it's in my mind happening. I look to the corner of my room, and I see this light appearing, and it starts getting brighter with rays coming out of it. And at that time, I was hearing voices of other people saying, "Don't be afraid of the light, it's okay." And then it was like a peaceful feeling. And at that time, I can feel my past relatives' presence there. And when this was happening, I rose up out of my body, and I can oversee the whole valley of Bakersfield where I'm at. And everything was really beautiful. And I rose so high. I guess there's supposedly some holy spots in this earth. And I hit these two holy spots where they've had visions I'm Catholic. They've had visions of Mary and these holy spots. So I hit these two holy spots, and I took off from there. Like I took a portal. And when I went to this portal, I was seeing different spirits of different beings, kind of like a really bright light flashing, going by me really fast, until I got to this one portal where it stopped, and I can see everything in front of me was really grayish, but I seen silhouettes of people standing like in a line going up to this big light in the sky.
Mm-hmm.
And on the right-hand side of me, there was a big swirl black swirl, like a black hole. And I was really, really scared, and I didn't know what to do. So I saw what was going on, and I felt myself coming back. And first thing that came to my mind were my children, and I didn't want to leave right now. So as I was coming back, I felt myself come back and go back into my body. And at that point, I woke up trying and grabbing my girlfriend at the time and screaming and crying. And I didn't understand what happened there. It was really freaked me out. But after that happened, I was not the same person. And it took me like 3 or 4 days to get over what happened to me. I didn't shower. I didn't eat. And everything was brand new to me. I mean, was I going crazy, or is that like an out-of-body experience?
You're definitely not going crazy. That is such a classic out-of-body experience, and a very beautiful one, too. And it also totally shows exactly what we were just talking about, which is how when someone is undergoing a difficult period of time, how God reaches down and shows you the beauty. You saw the light. You felt the presence of your relatives. You were taken to these apparition sites. I had some experiences like that too, where I was taken to apparition sites. I think there's a particular energy that we're given when we're taken to those. And I think you were given this as a blessing to show you that despite the turmoil that was around you, there was perfection in that turmoil. And I would really encourage you and others who have experiences like that and want to know what other people are experiencing and are wondering if that's typical or not. That is very classic out-of-body experience. Go to outofbodytravel.org, and all the books there are downloadable for free. And you can read Come to Wisdom's Door will outline the various stages, which you just outlined very well, of what an out-of-body experience actually looks and feels like. There's also a series of books for people who have specific questions on things like ghosts and lost souls, spirit guides, guardian angels, reincarnation karma, angels, demons, heaven, hell, and purgatory. You can download all those things for free. And if you have an experience like this and you're questioning what it is, this will help you to realize that that was a beautiful experience, I believe.
Why do people who have this kind of experience, Marilyn, come back different or act differently?
Well, it'd be interesting to ask our caller that in his particular case. I think in most cases, it's because you've experienced the unconditional love of God, and it completely transforms everything that you are. You're also understanding some mysteries, even if only for a moment. And you can't bring that whole understanding of those mysteries back with you, but you bring back enough of it to know that what you're seeing around you isn't all there is, and it broadens your perspective and helps you to cope more.
In terms of real time, how long do you think the longest you've ever been out in an OBE?
That's a good question. I have had situations, most of the time I would have to say it's probably, generally a 2 or 3 hour adventure, but I have had some unusual circumstances, and these are unusual, where I have been out for 48 hours.
That's a long time.
Yes, they're very unusual when that happens, and there's usually some very unusual circumstances to why. I'd probably say maybe I've experienced that 4 or 5 times.
Now, what about your physical body? I mean, are you literally
completely out
for 48 hours?
Yes.
No food, no water?
No food, no water. My family will tell me that they tried to arouse me, but they couldn't, and I'll just, wake up 2 days later, and they'll be, like, worried, and I'll be like, what's the problem? Because to me, I didn't know I'd gone that long. and then
one more day, you could have dehydrated.
Yeah, it's a bizarre phenomenon, but that's the unusual case. The normal would probably be 2 to 3 hours, something like that, at a time.
Let's go to Chris driving around in Tennessee. Go ahead, Chris. You're up with us.
Hey, George. How you doing?
Good, Chris.
Hi, Chris.
Hey, Marilyn. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
pretty good. Two quick things. From a dream state status, I don't know that I've ever had an OBE, but I'll start with the first. When I was in my late teens, I had a dream where I was murdered, and I was shot, and everything was vivid. It felt real. I could feel blood trickling, taste gunpowder or whatever. And then all of a sudden, to me, it seemed like my soul was raising out of my body, and I started looking down on myself. It kind of scared me, so I woke up, and, it was just really peculiar to me. And then a couple years later, I had a dream where I was being confronted by an evil presence, and basically it was trying to get me to bargain my soul. And it frightened me very much, so that I made myself wake up. And coming from the dream state status back to consciousness, it felt like the presence itself, like, coming through this realm and pulled back. Have you experienced anything like that? I don't know. Just extremely peculiar to me.
Was it an OBE, and he was traveling through some kind of evil area, like we were talking about, or was that something different?
I had a little trouble hearing him.
I know. He was on his speaker, but,
okay.
But he was driving. So.
Yes, I've definitely had experiences with evil spirits. I'd actually recommend that he download the Mysteries of the Redemption and follow that through, because there's a great deal of information on spiritual warfare. There's also another book called Spiritual Warfare, Angels and Demons, which he would benefit from.
Yeah, it sounds like that's exactly what he was encompassing. We'll be back with final phone calls with Marilyn Hughes in a moment. Marilyn, if somebody picks up out-of-body experiences, what message would you like them to take away after they read this?
I'd like them to realize that the path to out-of-body experiences is so much vaster and greater than I think most people realize. It goes well beyond the idea of traveling around the earth and kind of playing around with it. It goes well into higher realms, lower realms, intermediate realms, and it actually is a window into the evolution of the soul if it is pursued in the proper manner. It can be a really, really important and vital evolutionary leap.
It's like it's a tool too, isn't it?
It is a profound tool, a very profound tool. It gives us a window into ourselves and into the people around us, into the situations that we're in and why we're in them, into the mechanics of existence, how things work, why we're here. It's a very profound tool.
If you went out and polled people, how many would know about out-of-body experiences, astral projection? What do you think?
That's a good question. I'm probably a little biased because I hear from people who come to the website who are interested in that.
And they know, they already know it.
So they're interested. If I were just going to pull people off the street, I'd probably guess, my guess would be about 50%. What would yours be?
30%.
About 30.
Off the street.
Okay.
Coast to coast listeners, 98%.
Yes. good clarification. Yeah.
Let's go to the phones. Let's go to San Juan Capistrano in California, first-time caller. Hello, Patricia.
Hello, George, Marilyn. Excellent show. Thanks so much. I was hoping you could tell me your opinion on something I've been wondering about for a long time.
Sure.
There's this really wealthy, famous businessman from Australia, and his name is Kerry Packer. He had 8 heart attacks. And he was in a famous television interview.
Sure, very prominent family there, too.
Yes, yes. He a media man, I believe.
Yes, huge, yep.
And he was clinically dead for 6 minutes. And in a famous TV interview, he said he had died and gone to the other side, and there's nothing there. He said, the good news is there's no devil, and the bad news is there's no heaven. And he kind of single-handedly got that country thinking that there's nothing going on the other side. So I wanted to know why some people die and have these wonderful experiences and other people die and they don't see anything. And I had a theory about it that maybe he's spiritually dead or something like that. But then I thought, well, that's really the only thing that's really, really alive in you even after you are dead. So I just would love to know what you two think about this.
Sure. And just to clarify, I've never heard of him before, but just based on what you're telling me, it sounds like he went to one of the black voids. And there are black voids. These are part of the intermediate worlds. And it does appear that there is nothing else. There are people who have experienced where they go to these black voids, and I've seen it too, but people who have had near-death experiences explain it that they were not able to communicate with other beings, and other beings were unable to communicate with them, and a lot of times they weren't aware of there being any other. It's just a black void. It's an emptiness.
Is that like the purgatory thing?
Well, it probably would be in those I would put it in the intermediate realms, which would be in the purgatorial. It's an intermediate stage between death and going into the next place he would go. If he were in a black void, he wouldn't stay there for a very long time, but he might be there for a while because it is a place of emptiness. But he would translate into another purgatorial realm after a certain period of time of having been there. And the best way to describe the black voids is emptiness. And so there's probably some issue regarding emptiness there.
Would you think people like the Dalai Lama astral project?
I don't know if he does. I have profound, profound respect for the Dalai Lamas, all 14 of them. I had a profound experience regarding the Dalai Lamas once, which completely, you know, altered. I would think that he probably does. I had an experience years ago.
What about the Pope? Probably not.
I think Pope John Paul II did. I don't know about Pope Benedict XVI. I think Pope John Paul II was a pretty sort of mystical guy.
Interesting. Gainesville, Texas, we go east of the Rockies. Hi, Daniel.
Hello, Marilyn. Hello, George.
Hey.
Hi, Daniel.
Mine's kind of a lame story, but I was just kind of curious about it my whole life. When I was a kid, I remember it seemed like it happened a lot. I would get the sensation of, like, flying about 20 feet above the houses in my neighborhood. And I know it's kind of just boring, but the feeling I had, even to this day, I remember how amazing that felt. I was just wondering if that would have been a out-of-body deal.
Might have been one. Might have been an uncontrolled one, Marilyn.
Right, yeah, I think so. And the flying experiences are very, very exciting. So, you know, they're
even
not...
if you're just over your house.
Yes, they really
it's
are.
It's kind of cool.
They really are. When you have those experiences, they are very exhilarating and... yeah, I think that he just probably an uncontrolled, didn't remember the whole thing, but remembers part of it.
Do you think people under altered states, whether they're on something, tend to astral project a little more than someone who is not?
Whether they're on something?
Yeah, like ayahuasca or something like that.
I think that what I have found is that people who do that kind of stuff do sometimes have experiences as a result, but it's... more likely to be less controlled, ironically, and there's more of a chance that you're going to have a negative experience because you're kind of pushing it rather than allowing nature to take its course and going through the normal, the spiritual procedures that would bring you there. And so I've spoken to people who have had some negative experiences. Some people have had positive ones, too, but I don't recommend that route because I think that you want to allow God and the eternal to direct your path rather than trying to force it. And when you force anything, there's a little bit of a boundary there with eternal law when you're talking about spiritual matters in terms of forcing it.
What is our path, anyway?
Our path is to go from selfishness to selflessness, but each of us has individual issues that have to do with vices, individual vices that we might have ourselves. Some people have karmic issues that are related to various people that they might have incarnated with that they have to work something out with. They have to do it differently this time around than they've done it previously.
Mm-hmm.
people have various power, control, greed, lust type issues that have to be overcome in order for us to become ready to go to the next level and no longer be in like a third or fourth dimensional type existence.
Okay, next up, let's go to Randy in Glendora, California. Hey, Randy, go ahead.
Hi. Hi, George. Hi, Merlin. Fantastic
Hi, Randy.
Show. Real quickly, I just want to touch upon something that you had previously talked about with another caller.
Okay.
And then I want to just real quickly mention my two OBEs.
Okay.
This happened 15 years ago. My brother-in-law at the time passed away. But just before that occurred, I was at my house. I was sleeping. I was in a dream. And I had a vision of him coming to me in complete darkness. It was pitch black, and there was an entity with him, smaller than him, but I couldn't quite make out the entity. And he wanted to tell me, he was dying of cancer, and he wanted to tell me that he was okay, and that he just wanted to see me again. And there was this overwhelming feeling of extreme urgency to the whole event. And then this entity more or less, you know, was communicating to him to say that he had to go. And then that was it. And I woke right up. And I happened to, I just jumped practically out of bed. I looked at the clock to see what time it was. It was about 1:15. The next morning, I went over to the house, and my wife at the time was staying with her sister. And at that point, he passed. When I got there, I got a call the next morning, actually, and then I went over to the house. He'd already passed away. The coroner came in, and they listed the time of death at 1:15. And I thought that was, you know,
wow.
very peculiar. And I felt so strongly that I had seen him already and that he was okay. If you can imagine, in this kind of atmosphere, I was telling people that he was okay and that he wasn't really, you know, he hadn't passed away. He was still... He was still around. He was okay, and I just thought that was when your last caller had mentioned that about the void, like a trans. And you mentioned it's kind of like a transitional period.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people
exactly
have experiences like that where they see somebody right either shortly before or after their time of death.
Yeah.
In a similar fashion, it's a pretty common experience that people will have. And so that's actually a nice gift to receive when you have a visit like that.
Yeah, it was just it stays with me today too. It really does, and it just made the whole process that much easier for I think everybody, certainly myself.
Yeah.
The two OBEs that I
let me just give us one, okay? Because we're almost out, and I got like 20 guys on.
Well, I flew out of my body one night just at the point of falling asleep, and I was staring down at the earth, and I said to myself, this is the second time it happened. I said, well, let me do a somersault or move my arms or something to know that this is real. And sure enough, I moved my arms. I did a somersault, and I said, oh my God, this is actually occurring. And I sure enough, I was looking down at the earth. As crazy as that sounds.
No, it's not crazy. Actually, that's one of the neatest vantage points to have in an out-of-body experience, as you well know. I mean, it's really an awesome experience to look down at the earth from your spiritual body up in the stars.
It really is strange, too, isn't it?
It's great.
You can't wait after the show. You're gone again, aren't you?
Yeah.
Let's go to Los Angeles. Hello, Valerie. It's your turn.
Good evening, George. Good evening, Marilyn.
Hi, Valerie.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Not bad. Now, this is kind of in reference to a comment that a previous caller had made when it comes to dreams and OBE. Now, I've had flying dreams many, many times in the past. Haven't had one for quite a few years, but they've always been on the horizontal. This, and I've tried many times to do OBE, where I think three times I may have accomplished it, but I think my efforts have always been trying too hard. My question is, I have in the past had many levitating dreams. I'll be out in the open, in familiar territory, in unfamiliar territory, and the levitation is so effortless. It would be just a very slight push, almost as if you were in zero gravity.
Right.
I could control the height. I can control the speed. But it was every single time that I have had it, it's always been so exhilarating. I mean, I could just talking about it can actually feel it again, how I felt during the levitation. Could that possibly be my form of OBE? Again, because it's always been in more so familiar territory than unfamiliar, and it's always been controllable, where in my flying dreams, going horizontally has been more to the uncontrollable, and, you know, low altitude, high altitude, but I've never been able to control it. Levitation, always could control it.
It might just be that that comes more naturally to you, and that is your particular area where you excel, and it comes naturally.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it definitely could be that.
Valerie, thanks for your call. Let's go to Granbury, Texas. We've got Vic now on Coast to Coast. Hi, Vic.
Hi, Vic.
How you doing, Marilyn?
All is well. Hi.
It's an honor to speak to both of you. I just wanted to share right quickly. I'm a first-time caller, former Marine, actually a combat vet, wounded.
Thank you for your service.
Thank you.
Very nice of you to say that.
Thank you. During my Marine years, this was before I actually went to combat, I'm an avid martial artist, and I'm really working out hard. My OBE experience was I just got done with a really extreme workout. I went back to the barracks, and I laid down and took a shower, laid down. But I was so exhausted that when I laid down, I didn't go to sleep. I didn't, pass out or anything like that. But I could hear everything around me that was going on. And all of a sudden, my body felt like I was four to 6 inches above my rack. The rack. I was levitating, like the last caller said.
Uh-huh.
Funny thing about all your callers this evening, and I've been listening. It's a great, great show tonight, George. Is that I can tie in with every one of the callers that called in tonight. I tie in with every one of them, the levitation. I did have an audio body experience because once I was at that stage, I was like in a northeast corner looking down at my body, which was about 4 to 6 inches above my rack. The thing about it is that, and like everybody else said, it was great. The feeling was great. I was flying. I was, everything. When I tried to get back into my body was the issue.
Uh-oh.
I couldn't do it.
Now, that's interesting.
It should happen automatically, Marilyn.
You
promised us.
I could not do it. Something was blocking my way back in.
That's weird.
The only thing the only thing that was option that I had to me was, the only way I could explain it is I had to go around the world to come in at a different angle. Yes, ma'am. That's what was funny. The whole thing about it, the whole experience wasn't really scary or spooky or anything. I was still in control. I just could not get back into my body the way I came out. I had to, and that's the only way I can. I felt like I physically went all the way around the world to come back in a different angle. And once that I did that, everything was good. I'm a Native American. That's my heritage. So, I've experienced a lot of other stuff growing up and everything, do a lot of Native American ceremonies and stuff. So
Well, let's get Marilyn's reaction because we're almost out of time, and I want you to tell us where we can get out of body experiences. But what do you think's going on? If he can't get into his body, that's
The first thing that came to mind with that is him having to go around the world. I feel like it's possible that there was something necessary about him taking that journey before he returned back. That's what it sounds like.
But it should be automatic to come back into your body. Where do you get the book?
It generally is. The books are at outofbodytravel.org, the Out of Body Travel Foundation. Everything we have is downloadable for free, and we're going to do a special giveaway for Coast to Coast AM listeners of 25 book packages. So go to the site at outofbodytravel.org, and you can read all our books, download them, and register to win.
Super. Thanks, Marilyn. Always fun having you on the program.
Thank you, George. Appreciate it.
That's Marilyn Hughes, Out of Body Experiences. For Dan Galante, Jason Bowers, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesur, Ross Mitchell, George Knapp, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.